Hello, everybody, and it's going to be a special day. I've got Stephanie here. Hey, Stephanie.
Hi there.
And it's exciting today because we're going to be interviewing Claude Taylor, which is True Facts Stated on Twitter. He's standing by right now, and we're going to get right to it because I know everybody wants to hear what he has to say. So I'm just going to give the little introduction for those of you. I'm sure a lot of people listening to this know Claude because I tweeted, and then Claude retweeted that we were going to be doing this interview. And of course, people were all excited and they were retweeting and they were commenting. So I want to say, first of all, his Twitter feed, which again is True Facts Stated, his Twitter handle. His bio reads this, veteran of three presidential campaigns, served on the White House staff, Clinton, country over party, never Putin's bitch, my car is faster than yours, and chaos agent, which I know the chaos agent, you'll have to explain that later, but it's what someone called him. And he tweets about Trump-Russia. He shares what he learns from his sources. So I want to make sure that everybody understands something. Number one, this is a very casual podcast. Number two, the goal of this interview is not to sell Claude. It's not to play hardball or softball. Basically, Stephanie and I have questions, and we wanted to ask him questions. So we're going to be quenching our own curiosity, and hopefully the questions that we ask will also answer things for people online who are excited to hear more about him. And we're going to give Claude an opportunity to explain why he does what he does, and also to weigh in on some of what, you know, people have said negatively about him on Twitter. And I know that he has gotten many things right for a while he's been on. I've only been following him for the past couple of months. I believe I started following him when he had around 60,000 followers, and now he's up to about 177,000. I know that Joy Reid has mentioned him, and Keith Olbermann did one of his GQ videos talking about some of his tweets, and I'm going to intro him, and eventually I'm going to talk about some of the things that he's gotten correct before anybody else reported them. But
qualifying him.
Yes, exactly. So we're going to bring him on now. Hello, Claude.
Hello.
Hi, Claude.
Thank you for joining our show. We're really excited to have you because we talk about you on the podcast, and I follow you like I'm just one of your obsessed fans, I guess. And I read that article you posted from the LA Times where the author was saying that, you know, he was not even finished writing his article and he went and checked your feed. So I'm kind of one of those people too. You're one of my first go-tos to see what you have to say. So let's just start off with, do you have any breaking information for us? Maybe something about Sessions or something? Have anything juicy?
I don't know that I have anything juicy. I've been kind of occupied with my other life today, which is getting ready for an art festival. Mm-hmm. Yesterday was kind of interesting. One of the stories that came down the pike yesterday, Michael Isikoff, who is a widely respected veteran investigative journalist, came out with a story that major law firms were not interested in having Donald Trump as a client.
Yes.
And that was interesting. I just want to point out, I did tweet about 10 days ago something very similar, but this is sort of a good example of what's kind of gone on. I put out just a very, very, not a great deal of detail. It's just a tweet. Basically saying that the White House was searching for high-powered, high-level D.C. lawyers. And funny thing is, the D.C. law firms aren't returning White House phone calls.
Yeah.
I kind of said the same thing that Michael Isikoff said last night. But, you know, he is a serious, respected journalist, and he had sources, and he, you know, spent weeks researching this. You know, a lot of the stuff I put out there, you know, it's kind of, it's just raw intelligence. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not necessarily going to have all of the I's dotted and the T's crossed. And I think last night's Isikoff's story, which got wide play as a breaking story, is a good example. I'm not taking anything away from him, but I essentially did say the same thing 10 days earlier.
Right.
And you've been, you know, it's not prescience. It's you're informed and you have, you know, qualified sources that you're obviously not going to name here. But, you know,
I'm going to read you a list of all my sources.
Yes, please, Claude. And that's the end of True Facts Stated. You know, I heard that Isikoff story as well. I think it's interesting that, you know, not only is Trump just toxic, but these people are concerned with whether or not they're going to be viable after their recruitment efforts would be dampened. They would, you know, they have to run as far and fast as they can from this.
Yeah. But and they're also lawyers. So they're worried that they might not get paid.
That's the other thing. That's the other thing.
Yeah. Which is Trump's history.
He doesn't pay the lawyers, and then he hires new lawyers to settle with the lawyers who he didn't pay. And this is just who he is. And we all knew this going in. But Claude, with this information that Michael Isikoff of Yahoo broke yesterday, how did you 10 days prior, did one of your sources come and say, hey, look, you know,
this is what's... Yeah. Yes. I mean, I have... you know, because I live in Washington, I mean, we can talk about my sources, to some degree, not individually, obviously, but I can tell you about the sorts of people they, you know, or the worlds they come from. But it's Washington, D.C. I've lived here for a long time. I have a number of sources who I would describe as working in the legal community. Mm-hmm. I have a number of sources who I would describe as working in the intelligence community. Mm-hmm. I have a number of sources who can be described as working in the media. And I had, you know, this was not a huge story. I mean, right. 10 days ago, you know, somebody I've known for a long time said, just you know, we're just exchanging text messages. Mm-hmm. And they told me, this is kind of funny, but, you know, this firm over here got a call from the White House. And I understand last week, you know, they called that firm over there and the partners met and nobody wants anything to do with it.
Yeah.
It was all kind of like, kind of flippant, you know, kind of like, it wasn't a story. It was just like, nobody wants to talk to Trump because he's Trump.
But it's a story now.
But it's a huge story. Now
it's a huge story because Michael Isikoff broke it.
Yeah.
Right.
But 10 days ago, it was just, you know, frankly, for me, it was just a throwaway tweet. It wasn't a big deal.
Interesting. Right. Well, you know, yesterday when I said that I was going to be interviewing you, of course, when you retweeted it, a whole bunch of naysayers came on and they wanted to understand where you get your information. So, or I'm sorry, your past, and you've explained a little bit, but could you explain to us what you did in the Clinton White House?
Okay, let me sort of back up a little bit and sort of give you the brief bios too. I worked in the White House a long time ago. Mm-hmm. I had a not a high level job. I directed the White House's volunteer program back in the mid 90s, the first term of the Clinton administration. We had about 2,000 volunteers. And I was a paid staff person. It's not a volunteer job, as some people have suggested. I supervised a staff of two or three people, depending on the time, administering that volunteer office. The volunteers in the White House basically served as administrative support throughout the White House complex. You can kind of think of it as running a giant temp agency within the White House. That's what I did. In addition to that, I had the opportunity. The Clinton White House was a fairly collaborative place. They needed someone to monitor elections in Albania. So I raised my hand. So I went off to Albania for a few weeks.
Wow.
They needed someone to serve as a liaison between the federal government's response to the Kobe earthquake in 94, 95. So I raised my hand and I went off to Japan for a few weeks to serve as a liaison between the U.S. federal government's response to Kobe and the Japanese government. I went to Argentina to speak about the former president of Argentina had a program doing basically international peacekeeping. So I kind of got involved in that. I got involved in some refugee issues. So I was sent to a place you may be familiar with. I was sent to Guantanamo Bay, Cuba for a couple weeks.
Wow.
Back before Guantanamo Bay was cool. and it wasn't, it was also in a previous, in this time period, it was where tens of thousands of Cuban refugees escaped to. So I was able to do, I was able to begin traveling a lot for the government, and I was doing some different things. I did develop sources doing some of these things, but I did leave politics for the most part behind me at the end of the 1996 presidential campaign. So I worked on 92 campaign, then I worked in the White House for 3 or 4 years, and then I worked on the 96 campaign for an additional year. So I did Clinton Gore for about 5 years, pretty much without a break. After that, I was pretty burnt out, to be honest. I had been going to some of these different places, and I really developed an interest in photography. I started taking a lot of photos. Long story short, I opened up a photography gallery in 1998 in the DuPont Circle neighborhood of DC. Most people who know me out, you know, prior to Twitter, mm-hmm. perhaps, know me as the guy who owned the photography store on Connecticut Avenue for a long time. I had that store for 18 years until last summer, till last August. I finally closed after 18 years.
Wow.
I don't want to go too far with this, but I would say it's fair to say my sources come from different places. You know, I have lived in Washington, D.C. since 1993. Washington's a very incestuous place. Everybody knows people who work in these different fields, mm-hmm. legal, IC, media, among others. Having had the government experience, having had a photography gallery that specialized in photos of different countries, I met lots of people who worked at lots of different embassies. You know, it was right around the corner from the Brookings Institute. I met lots of people who worked on New Hampshire Avenue and Massachusetts Avenue, which is where all the think tanks are, which is where all the embassies are in Washington, D.C. And over the years, I developed friendships and relationships with a lot of people who worked for these institutions. And I have maintained and developed those contacts over a period of, you know, the last 25 years. You know, some people I've met more recently on Twitter, you know, so Twitter kind of added a whole nother layer to that.
So you're saying that since you've started tweeting about Trump Russia, more sources have come to you?
Certainly, yes.
Okay.
And are people talk anyway, loose lips, I'm sure, but now they're seeking you out. Hey, I got some info. Share it with your 177,000 followers.
Right. That can kind of be a double-edged sword, because there's definitely one has to be very careful with what information comes in now, because of, you know, it can be misinformation. It can be disinformation. It can be, you know, someone seeking me out because I have 177,000,
Right.
It is true. I'm getting more sources and different sources now because I'm on Twitter, building upon a base I had previously. But one has to be very cautious, frankly, with the new stuff.
Well, I want to add now some of the things that I think I first became aware of something that you got right when you tweeted about the grand juries. I believe you tweeted about the grand juries on 4/28, and this was the thing that I believe Keith Olbermann picked up on as well, maybe even Joy Reid, if I'm correct. But you had tweeted out about the grand juries, forming, And you mentioned the Eastern District of Virginia. Weeks later, MSM confirmed it, and then I think Comey even mentioned something about the Eastern District and strongly suggested that grand juries were being impeded.
When people ask me to prove what I said about the Eastern District of Virginia, I refer them to James Comey's under oath testimony.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then you also you mentioned I guess you were first to call on the fact that there was an FBI investigation, and then Comey again proved you right. Am I right there?
I think so. You know, some of this is sort of open to interpretation about. I'm not trying to. I think that is accurate.
Okay.
That being said, I'm not really trying to like come up with a laundry list of stories that I got right first. You know.
No, but I am because
we are
because I've seen the shit they've said about you, and my personal opinion about you, and I'd like to ask this because you've been referred to as the news, and I don't really view you as the news. I view you as a man with sources who's sharing this information, and some of the stuff is going to prove that, you know, it's going to happen. Some of it may not happen. That doesn't mean if you say, oh, okay, my sources told me this, and then it doesn't come to pass, it doesn't mean you're a fraud. It just means, as you said, either there was a disinformation incident or there was changes. I mean, would you say that? Like, let's say you say something's going to happen. I don't want to call it making a prediction, but you say X is going to happen, and then maybe that doesn't happen. Would you say that that's because perhaps things have shifted and now what was going to happen isn't going to happen now because, you know?
Yes. Okay. No, I think the way you summarized it is pretty accurate. You know, and I think I don't want to go too far down this road, but, mm-hmm. you know, when Mueller got appointed a few weeks ago, it just changed the landscape.
Right.
Suddenly and dramatically. So, mm-hmm. so lots of stuff that we were expecting to happen in a certain time frame, didn't quite happen in that time frame. You know, there was kind of a restart, a reset, almost. So that's something that was like a big occurrence that kind of like shook everything up.
Okay.
But in general, I think you have categorized things correctly. You know, I have. You know, it's just me here. There's no, I don't have a staff of researchers and fact checkers and, you know, assistants running around. It's just, you know, it's just me and me talking to, you know, the sources I've developed over the last number of years and on Twitter to try to come up with stuff, you know, mm-hmm. that I find interesting, that I find pertinent, that I find, you know, everything that I've found, you know, leads me in a very certain path, and that is that Donald Trump will be forced from the presidency, and that will happen. You know, we're hearing a lot about obstruction of justice, but, you know, there's a lot of other stuff out there that's going to be coming out. You know, there's lots of intelligence agencies around the world who have contributed their raw intelligence to this effort. This is almost a global effort to present the prosecutors in this investigation with enough evidence to form the basis for Trump's impeachment or to force his resignation.
Okay, that is without question the best news I have heard since November 8th. Of 2016. This is what I've been hoping to hear. Claude, you're so connected hearing that from you. You know, like Kimberly said at the beginning of the conversation, you are her go-to. You are one of the first people I check for newsworthy information on a daily basis. That's like music to my ears. That makes my heart happy.
Well, what do you... Okay, go ahead. Sorry, go ahead.
No. I'm just like, and to hear it with such certainty coming from you, a man who is clearly someone who very connected people, sources, trust with their information. And you disseminate it in such a way that it's there's thought to it, and it's reliable. I'm blown away. Thank you.
And that, you know, I want to ask you two questions, but first, here it is. I'll just say, number one, why do you do this? But after you tell us why you do this, I'm really interested in hearing your thoughts on the testimony we heard today, and then what we may be hearing from Comey tomorrow.
Yep.
Okay, as to why I do this, Donald Trump, it is just so important that Donald Trump be removed from office as quickly as possible. I know there's a lot of people who, listening to this, who I'm sure agree with that, but I was not intending to come back into this in the way that I have, but you know, I'm talking to my friends, my sources, and I'm hearing all this stuff. You know, all this stuff about illegal activities and intercepts and the Estonian government has this, and the German government has that, and the British intel has this, and everything in the Steele dossier is more or less has been verified, depending on how granular you want to get. I feel like I had no choice. I mean, this is just it's my civic duty. I am a partisan Democrat. I'll make no bones about that. But this isn't about party. You know, this is about country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is about putting country before party. You know, I'd like to believe that I would be doing the exact same thing if the current occupant of the White House was a Democrat. If the current occupant of the White House was a Democrat and had done what Trump has done to get themselves there, I do believe I would be doing exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
For sure.
As far as today's testimony, to be honest, I haven't been able to listen to it in its entirety. I probably will have more developed thoughts later. But from the portions and the kind of overview, I think everyone just needs to relax a little bit.
Yeah.
Today was not the end of the world.
Right.
Trump is not getting away with this because the NSA director or because Dan Coats are being reticent. I think they're being careful.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot going on here. This is tip of the iceberg stuff, and they're not ready. And I'm not sure they should be ready to say in open session everything that they know.
Right.
Everything that has been confirmed to them. And I think mostly what we saw today are experienced bureaucrats being cautious.
Right.
Well, Bob, I think, has a question.
Yeah, I don't have a question. Hi, Claude.
I'm just thrilled that I'm on a show that actually has a producer.
cool. This just came down. Robert Costa from the Washington Post has Comey's statement for tomorrow. And we've got it published here in PDF form. In fact, it's the Senate Intelligence Committee just posted it.
Huh.
Here's the part that stood out to me. This is regarding the January 27th dinner with Comey in the green room at the White House with the president. And this is just the two of them. A few minutes later, the president said to Comey, quote, "I need loyalty. I expect loyalty." Comey didn't move, speak, or change his facial expression in any way during the awkward silence that followed. I'm going to continue in Comey from Comey's POV. He said, "We simply looked at each other in silence. The conversation then moved on, but he returned to the subject near the end of our dinner. At one point, I explained why it was so important that the FBI and the Department of Justice be independent of the White House. I said it was a paradox. Throughout history, some presidents have decided that because problems come from justice, they should try to hold the department close. But blurring those boundaries ultimately makes the problems worse by undermining public trust in the institutions and their work. Near the end of our dinner, the president returned to the subject of my job, saying he was very glad I wanted to stay, adding that he had heard great things about me from Jim Mattis, Jeff Sessions, and many others. He then said, quote, 'I need loyalty.'" This is the second time. I replied, and this is exactly as it was reported originally a couple of weeks ago, or I forget exactly how long ago it was. Comey replied, "You will always get honesty from me." Trump paused and then said, "That's what I want. Honest loyalty."
Oh,
oh my God.
I paused and then said, quote, "You will get that from me. As I wrote in the memo I created immediately after the dinner, it is possible we understood the phrase honest loyalty differently, but I decided it wouldn't be productive to push it further. That term, honest loyalty, had helped end a very awkward conversation, and my explanations had made clear what the what he should expect." Wow. It continues on and on. That's just from the January 27 dinner.
And Robert Costa tweet this?
Well, no, he posted this. It's actually... The Senate Intelligence Committee has this entirely as a PDF on its site now.
Okay. One of the things that sort of amused me by this part of the story with Comey is that Donald Trump and his completely inept White House staff seem completely unaware of the well-established Washington tradition of writing memos to the file.
Yeah.
And they don't understand what that they did. I don't think they had a clue what that concept was, and how valuable they are, and how I'm not a lawyer, but they have legal merit. And Comey is really good at this. Mm-hmm. He's really good at this. Donald Trump is not. You know, he brings his New York property developer / wannabe mobster values to the U.S. presidency.
Yeah.
And it's just not working. He's not even, I mean, we can talk about his mental state if you want, but
which
you
is
know, maybe
another
this
thing
is something he could
about.
Have pulled off 20 years ago.
Yeah.
But given the deterioration that we see evident, he's not up to this. He's trying to pull off the most incredible conspiracy in U.S. history, perhaps, if everything is borne out, and as I believe it is, that Vladimir Putin helped determine the winner of the 26th presidential campaign, and he's just not up to the job.
No.
You
know what I wanted to ask you also is, do you believe that there's a connection between Snowden, Assange, and WikiLeaks to Trump Russia?
Well, there's, WikiLeaks is basically has, I don't know if they started out this way, but WikiLeaks is basically an arm of Russian intelligence.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what I think.
That just is. You can talk about, like, did Snowden start out being a Russian intelligence operative, or did he become one later? I don't really know. But does Assange and how they all tie in together, what level of complicity is involved? I think there's a fairly high level of complicity among all the aforementioned. I don't think there's much doubt about that. Did they actually get involved in the very well designed plot by Russian intelligence to pull this off? I think they were all involved to some degree. It might have been a lesser degree. A lot of this, I don't know.
Hmm. Yeah.
But that's just sort of where my perspective, let me put it that way.
Right.
It seems that way to the regular just me as someone who's taking in this news, that makes perfect sense, and it's all so perfectly timed. I want to ask you a question, Claude. This is sort of overarching, but how do you see this Trump thing playing out? Like, do you have a time frame for him going down? What then becomes of Pence and Ryan? And I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, okay. Here's what I think. I do have a time frame. It really hasn't changed. I've said on Twitter, I believe that it's going to take 12, 18 months for this to play out.
From now or from inauguration?
Take your pick. I mean, okay. That's still, you know.
Gotcha.
You know, yeah. It could either be, you could start that clock at inauguration, or you can start it, you know, 5 months later. You know, I just can't, you know, there's so many variables involved. I can't be more precise than that.
Okay.
I mean, maybe it'll take 2 years, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, maybe it'll be quick as a year. I just don't know more than that. I firmly believe, I absolutely believe that Trump will not be the Republican nominee for president in 2020. I don't think he'll still be in office in 2020. Ultimately, if I had to guess, and this is just a guess,
You're not a psychic.
No. We know.
Okay. My guess is the way that it plays out is that at some point when enough of this evidence has become manifest, it will be somewhat similar to Nixon resignation, that he will resign the presidency in order to avoid impeachment and removal from office, and he will resign to forestall that eventuality.
Right.
If I had to further speculate, again, just speculation, there will be a medical excuse.
Oh, of course, because there has to be an excuse.
Yeah.
That he'll you know, whether it's his, you know, that he's been diagnosed as having frontotemporal dementia, as some qualified medical observers believe, or whether it'll be some more physical.
Like Hillary hit me in the balls with a bat, and I gotta quit now.
That's how I think it's going to play out. I think he'll resign for health reasons, quote unquote, in order to avoid his impeachment and removal. Do I believe that means we have President Pence, or is Pence also implicated? Do I believe that means we'll have President Ryan if Pence is implicated? Are they both implicated and we will somehow go all the way down to President Hatch?
Right.
You know what? I don't know. I haven't seen enough direct evidence, or I haven't been persuaded. I think any of those are possibilities. I think it's, if I had to guess, my just, again, speculation, I think we're more likely to end up with President Pence than we are with President Ryan or President Hatch. I think any of those are possible scenarios.
Right, because if Pence and Ryan are dirty, like, you know, I'm hoping they are, and they're implicated, then okay. So anything could play out. The one thing you're certain of is Trump ain't making it to 2020.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
I've got more of this statement here. This is from the February 14th Oval Office meeting. There were a bunch of people from the intelligence community all sitting around in a semicircle around Trump's desk. Everyone files out. Last one to file out was Jared Kushner. Then the president turned to the topic of Mike Flynn when it was just the president and Comey left in the office. President returned to the topic of Mike Flynn saying, quote, "He is a good guy and has been through a lot." He repeated that Flynn hadn't done anything wrong on his calls with the Russians, but had misled the vice president. He then said, quote, "I hope you can see your way clear to letting this go, to letting Flynn go. He is a good guy. I hope you can let this go." Comey said, "I replied only that, quote, he is a good guy. In parentheses, in fact, I had a positive experience dealing with Mike Flynn when he was a colleague as director of the Defense Intelligence Agency at the beginning of my term at FBI. That, by the way, he was fired by Obama from that position. Flynn was. Mm-hmm. I did not say I would let this go. This is Comey saying, I did not say I would let this go. The president returned briefly to the problem of leaks. I then got up and left out the door by the grandfather clock, making my way through the large group of people waiting there, including Mr. Priebus and the vice president. That was that meeting. Then there was the March 30th phone call. On the morning of March 30th, the president called me at the FBI. He described the Russia investigations as, quote unquote, a cloud that was impairing his ability to act on behalf of the country. He said he had nothing to do with Russia, had not been involved with hookers in Russia.
And
Oh, my God.
And had always assumed that he was being recorded when in Russia. He asked what we could do to, quote unquote, lift the cloud. I responded that we were investigating the matter as quickly as we could and that there would be a great benefit if we didn't find anything to having our work done well. He agreed, but then reemphasized the problems this was causing him.
Is Comey going to be saying all of this tomorrow?
Yes, okay. This is Comey's Comey's statement in full that he's going to be presenting tomorrow in the Senate. On the morning of April 11th, the president called me and asked that what I had done about his request that I get out. And that he had not, that he is not personally under investigation. Oh, his request that he get out, that Trump is not personally under investigation. I replied that I had passed his request to the acting deputy attorney general, but I had not heard back. He replied that, quote, the cloud, there it is again, was getting in his way of his ability to do his job. He said that perhaps he would have his people reach out to the acting deputy attorney general. I said that that was the way his request should be handled. I said the White House counsel should contact the leadership of the DOJ to make the request, which was the traditional channel. He said he would do that and added, quote, because I have been very loyal to you, very loyal. We had that thing, you know. I did not reply or ask him what he meant by that thing. I said only the way to handle it was to have the White House counsel call the acting deputy attorney general. He said that was what he would do, and the call ended. That was the last time I spoke with President Trump.
Wow, interesting. This is sure going
to be. Oh, my.
I'm not an attorney, but let's hear from some attorneys. That sounds a lot like obstruction to me.
Well, yeah, and totally. Also, he keeps denying it. He just repeatedly, yeah. It's in the statement here, he keeps saying, I did nothing wrong. That sounds like someone who did something wrong. Yeah. If you get pulled over by a cop and say, I didn't know I was speeding. That's exactly what he's doing.
When kids get caught doing something wrong, kids, young kids that don't know how to cover their tracks, that's what they do.
Yeah.
He's mentally like a child. But you know what? He's operating in this White House kind of in like sort of a mafioso fashion, yeah. You know, like Donnie two times. I'm very loyal, very, very loyal. You know, I mean, it's almost comical, but it's also frightening. And to that, Claude, I want to ask, you know, do you fear for your safety? I mean, you're doing what you believe is your duty, and we applaud you and thank you for it. But are you afraid? Have you been intimidated? Have you been threatened?
You know, people raise that issue, and I'm pretty public about, you know, I go to art festivals. Yeah. You know, I'm just not going there. You know, okay. I mean, screw them. This sound like a cliche, but you know, if I change my who I am, my lifestyle, my habits, you know, to me that's like giving in. I'm just not going to go there. I'm not going to do that. You know, I don't like paranoia. Believe it or not, you know, this may strike some people as kind of a non sequitur, but I really don't do conspiracy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anybody's out to get me.
No, that's I think that's great. And you're obviously a very relaxed, even keel guy. I wonder because you're putting some really powerful stuff out there.
Absolutely. And you know, just letting everyone know we're got about 5 minutes left. 5 minutes left with Claude. And I wanted to ask, well, I wanted to first of all say that, I have read some articles calling Claude and people that he kind of talks with on Twitter, like Louise Mensch, John Schindler, and there's the gentleman, I guess it's a gentleman, counter-checkist, And they've been referred to as either conspiracy theorists or fake news. And I think that's a load. Anybody listening can make their own mind. And, you know, if they choose to follow Claude or Louise or whoever, that's up to them. Nobody's forcing anybody to listen to Claude or read Claude or any of these people. I look at it like you have this information. You told me when I asked you to do this interview, that you're doing this because you believe that there needs to be positive and high morale in this country. And I completely agree with you. And for me, that's what you provide. You provide me with hope, because if you get something wrong, if you, it's not even you getting it wrong, because you're not making some kind of a prediction, pulling it out of your ass, you're hearing it from somebody. And if for some reason it doesn't happen, then, oh, well, nobody's life is going to end. And, you know, I've heard some of your critics talk about this in the way of, you know, that it's going to hurt the resistance. But it's not, because it's just going to happen or it isn't. And I think we're all on the same page here that Trump is more than likely going to have to leave, and that he's clearly guilty of obstructing justice. And I personally believe that he's bought, you know, by Putin. So I just wanted to kind of add that before I want to, you know, we'll see how much time we have. But I wanted to ask you, did you connect with Louise Mensch and John Schindler and all these people just because of your tweets? Did they have, you know, did you guys pick up on each other and that's how you became friendly?
I'm sorry, part of that last 10 seconds of your question was breaking up on our Skype connection. But can you just repeat just the very last bit?
Yes. I just was wondering how you basically connected with Schindler and Mensch and all those people.
Okay. Well, it was definitely through Twitter. I did not know either Louise Mensch or John Schindler prior to becoming a Twitter person. It's kind of interesting because I am a partisan Democrat. I've been involved in Democratic. I was a campaign nerd when I was, 9 years old. And I've been working on Democratic campaigns. You know, I'm 53. I've been working on Democratic campaigns since I was 9 years old, which was George McGovern.
Wow.
Always been a Democrat. That's just who I was, what I did. It's sort of ironic that some of the people that I'm most closely associated with on Twitter now are Republicans or conservatives. You know, Louise Mensch is a conservative. Mm-hmm. John Schindler is a conservative. You know, another person we haven't mentioned is Rick Wilson, a well-known Republican operative. For whatever reason, it sort of became a little bit of a niche for me was that, you know, I started talking to Republicans. And I started working with conservatives or Republicans, and that's just the way it is. You know, Louise and I, the reason we started working together to some extent is that our sources are completely different. They're different organizations. They're different individuals. They don't know each other. You know, we know because we've checked. And yet we were coming to a lot of the same conclusions. Hmm. You know, that doesn't mean that there's 100% uniformity in our opinions or our conclusions, but there's a great deal of overlap.
Right.
So it made sense to work together. I think she takes a lot of really unfair criticism. I think a lot of that is partisan. You know, she is a conservative. She has no doubt about that. She's conservative. So is John Schindler. So is Rick Wilson. But you know what? Again, this is about country first. You know, the party is not important.
Right.
That's something we all have to bear in mind. I will say one more word on just in defense of Louise. She is as committed an anti-Trump activist person as I've met. There is absolutely no question about her sincerity in terms of her anti-Trump. None.
Good.
Wow. Well, this has been a fascinating conversation. And before we go, I just would like you, if you want to address anybody out there as to not why should they follow you or why should they listen, but, you know, I mean, I guess I should rephrase this to say, do you have anything to say? Because obviously you have a lot of people out there who love you and love mm-hmm. your feed, but then you also have a lot of critics out there. Do you have anything to say to the people, whether it's on Twitter or, you know, reading articles? Is there anything that you just want to emphasize?
You know, I don't. I think we've really covered most of those bases. You know, I really am not going to try to dwell on the critics. There are people on Twitter who have decided for whatever reason that I'm their enemy. Yeah. You know what? That's their decision, but that doesn't mean that I'm going to make them my enemy.
Right.
You know, I'm here to try to do my little part to help get Trump out of office, period. I am not interested in overly, I don't believe, I'm not going to dwell or fixate on the naysayers. People can follow me. People can unfollow me.
Yeah. People,
you know, there's a block button.
Yeah.
Use it.
Yeah, we're adults.
And I will do the same. So, you know, if someone wants to come on my Twitter feed and they're just spreading hate, they're going to get blocked.
Yeah.
That is if I notice them.
Right.
You know, frankly, half the time, more than half the time, I don't even have time to read the comments, yeah. let alone respond to them.
Right.
But if I see somebody who's just coming on and they're just about hate, I'm just not dealing with it. The yeah. only time I'm going to give them is the time it takes to block them.
Well, that's, you know, speaking as a feminist online, I totally hear you. Oh, my God. All right. Well, awesome. Thank you, Claude, for joining us. And your answers and your information has been really interesting. And I'm so excited that you agreed to talk to us. So thank you
so much
for coming. And it's True Facts Stated is his Twitter account, if you're interested.
Thank you very much.
Claude, right. Thank you so much. And thanks for doing all this work for all yes. of us, for this, for the people of this country. We are truly grateful.
Yeah. And then I'll go back to after the show, obsessively checking your Twitter feed.
I'm already on it.
All right, Claude. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. 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 Oh, my God, Stephanie.
Oh, my God.
That was so cool.
I'm not kidding. I have not felt this good in how many months has it been? I'm so optimistic. I mean, what, you know, first of all, what an amazing dude first to do this, to put himself out there, you know, as Claude Taylor.
Yeah. Citizen Claude.
I admire him. Citizen Claude. Oh, and you know, just his forthrightness with his responses, and Bob, I'm so glad you were here. I'm always glad you're here, Bob. But to be able to read that,
yeah,
you know, I found it. I went immediately to Robert Costa's Twitter feed and pulled it up. But holy fucking shit. Hookers? The president said hookers to
yeah.
James Comey.
Now, and I will say that he had been briefed in the first meeting. Comey talks about the fact that in the first meeting he had briefed the president on that dossier. So yeah. it wasn't like Trump was bringing up the hookers completely out of context.
No, I'm sure. We all yeah. know about the hookers.
Right.
I just think it's funny that he used the word hookers. Like, this guy has no decorum.
No.
He's just such a pile of shit.
Yeah, he's like a monkey throwing shit.
He is. I'm sorry. Did you notice that I didn't cuss once when we were on with
yeah,
Claude?
Yeah, you know what? I think I might have once. I tried not to. I tried to be kind of professional.
It was appropriate. Okay, yeah. Let's just put it that way.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, this man is my freaking hero.
Yeah, I mean, this is I'm just excited about the fact that he was willing to talk to us. And you know, I mean, I've said so many times, whether it's been on the podcast or talking to Bob or my mom or you or whatever privately, that I just not only that I read his feed, but I can't understand why everybody has such a hard on. Well, not everybody, but certain people. Obviously, a lot of people like him because his Twitter feed is exploding all the time. It's just growing and growing and growing. But, you know, he's got, you know, as soon as I posted that I was going to be interviewing him, somebody came on and said something really condescending and shitty. And he basically told them to not be rude, which I thought was funny. And he's like, don't be rude. Goodbye. And and it's true. And it's like, you know, there are certain people that just they think that he's in this for his popularity. Like he wants to be popular.
And, he clearly and doesn't care.
It's not about popularity. It's about the fact that we have a fucking lunatic sitting in the Oval Office who's doing damage every minute, every second.
Minute.
And, you know, and I kind of want to go back to what he mentioned about Coates and Rogers and Comey. Mm. He's absolutely right. I think that everybody, I posted this on Twitter, I posted this on Facebook, everybody, when we have these kinds of hearings, people are expecting smoking guns, and it's not going to happen. There is an investigation going on now, and everybody has to be extremely careful. They can't say too much. They don't want to necessarily, you know, like, for instance, because I think, who was it? Was it Coates, I said? Or Coates, I mean, who said that he didn't feel pressure from Trump.
Right.
So, but on the other hand, he had said earlier that the fact that Trump asked him to intervene on the FBI investigation made him feel uncomfortable, which is pressure. If you come home from work and say, my boss wants me to do X, Y, and Z, and that made me uncomfortable, well, then that's feeling pressure. So going on record, though, and saying I felt intimidation or whatever it is, for some reason that might interfere, whether it's a risk of getting fired. You know, Bob had mentioned earlier something about maybe, you know, the 4chan crew doing damage there. So there are all kinds of reasons that we don't know, that we may not hear what we want to hear. And so many people jump to this negative, oh, nothing's going to happen. It's just going to be same old, same old. This is unprecedented. And with an FBI investigation going on, people have to be extremely careful about what they say publicly. So instead of looking at this like, oh, it's just such a big disappointment, recognize that every single testimony, every single hearing, it advances the story. It keeps us moving forward. And it's something that is going to take us to the next level and take us to the next, you know, round of what happens in this whole fiasco.
Did you guys see Angus King? I keep wanting to call him Angus Young. But, Senator Angus King, I mean, I feel, okay, so here they are in this open session. And King said, it is my belief that you are inappropriately refusing to answer questions around your conversations with Comey and Trump. He believes that they are inappropriately quiet.
Yeah.
And that it is their duty. And they were so uncomfortable.
Yes.
And all they wanted to say was, I got to check with legal counsel.
Right.
But what they did commit to is, in the closed sessions, I'm going to answer those questions.
Yes.
And so what I think, and I think King knows that, and I think he knew that before he
And that's all
that,
it's theatrics.
It's theatrics, but it's keeping it alive, and it's making all of us aware, because we are all on the edges of our seats waiting to hear. And God bless Angus King, because that dude was not going to back down. But what he's doing is he's keeping us all involved. And yes, he's getting a commitment that, yes, this will come out, and it is going to come out. That's good enough for me.
Yeah.
I'm not a patient person, but I'll wait.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll wait.
I feel exactly the same way.
Yeah.
And I mean, tomorrow's testimony is going to be fascinating.
Oh my God, tomorrow's testimony. Jesus.
I'm glad we don't have a radio show or anything so we could just watch it.
I'm just going to be glued. Everything I've got tomorrow, because I need to just pop some popcorn and sit right in front of that TV.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And again, I want to reiterate to anybody listening, just let this happen the way it's going to happen. I mean, you know, Claude is speculating, and he's not the only one. You know, there's Bob speculated the same thing. Bill Maher has made that bet with that Boris dude, whose name I can never pronounce, that, you know, he'd be out by Christmas. Well, maybe it's not going to be Christmas, but he's probably going to be resigning. And we're not sure how that's going to take form at this point. What's going to be the straw that breaks his back that forces him to resign? So, you know, we just have to take everything Comey says and with stride and understand that, you know, that things are going to, you know, unfold the way they're going to unfold.
Right.
So
it's all fair. It's all there. We just got to sit tight.
We're going to move on to end another thing. We're going to keep talking about this
in the
subscriber section. So that's why I want to tell everybody that you can support our show by becoming a monthly subscriber at patreon.com/startmeup. So if you pledge $1 a month, you just get our undying gratitude. Wouldn't that be awesome? And then also $5 a month will get you access to End Another Thing. And then you can pledge anything you want, $10, $20, $50, just to support independent podcasters. So thanks for listening, everybody. This is our free show. Thanks. Stay tuned for our subscriber and another thing. Yeah.